and how maintaining a diary became a kind of spiritual practice. At 11:30 today on Black Book Talk, author Debrina Jackson Gandy discusses her newest book, The Love Lies, and her work as a transformational speaker, mentor, and personal success coach. That's all coming up right after Air Cascadia, just minutes from now. It's headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre, and that is coming up next. Hey, thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. Not a current member? You can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today.
KBOO is proud to present a live broadcast of the Inner City Blues Festival, a benefit for Healthcare for All Oregon from the North Portland Eagles Lodge, 7611 North Exeter at North Lombard in Portland, Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight. Hear live performances from such local blues and R&B luminaries as LaRonda Steele, Norman Sylvester Band, and many more. Again, that's the Inner City Blues Festival live broadcast and show on Saturday, April 11th from 6 p.m. to midnight. More information is available at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, March 2nd, 2015, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Today's guest is Paul Lumley, Executive Director of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. A while back, there was an agreement. The Umatilla, Warm Springs, Yakima, and Colville tribes and the Bonneville Power Administration, the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Bureau of Reclamation gathered near Sagagalala, Shiwatches. Many people are familiar with the petroglyph at Columbia Hill State Park along the river. The partnerships created with the Accords secured $900 million for salmon restoration projects throughout the Columbia River Basin. More on that. Our guest, Paul Lumley, is going to elaborate on the Columbia River Fish Accords, where we stand right now. And all of this, just to bring everybody up to speed, there was a piece that came out in High Country News a while back by Ben Goldfarb. It's The Great Salmon Compromise. Subtitle, of course, the Columbia Basin Fish Accords have given $1 billion to tribes and states for habitat restoration projects. And the big question, though, remains, is all of this, all of this so-called restoration, is this any substitute for free-flowing rivers? That was a question in this article, and it was back in December 8th of 2014. To restore degraded streams in 2008, Cap Brigham and other tribal leaders struck this deal. It was the Columbia Basin Fish Accords. And on that note, we welcome Paul Lumley, Executive Director of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. Good morning, Paul. Thank you very much for being with us today.
Good morning.
Well, so I got started on this back in December. I'd always, for many years, felt a part of the Columbia River when I was a child. We fished on the river all the time, and the fish accords, all of this was signed in great ceremony, and in 2008. And where we stand now, things, not to climate, of course, climate change affects everything. The flow of streams and watersheds, the river, all of this affect salmon. and what tribal members, the signatories to the accords, what they are able to do with what they have left. The dams, for example, affect the Nez Perce inordinately. Could you bring us up to speed where we stand with the accords now, how you feel about the agreement and whether you think it's working? It's a lot to ask, but please feel free to talk to listeners about the Salmon Accords, the
River
Accords.
Well, I'll talk a little bit about it. When you contacted me, you wanted to talk about the Columbia River Treaty, which I'm prepared to talk about.
Yes.
But on the Accords, there were several agreements signed back in the year 2008 between the federal government and various parties to resolve issues, various issues, some result relating to the biological opinion with the hydropower system, but also for funding to implement fairly aggressive salmon habitat restoration initiatives. And the fish are coming back, so we have a lot of fish coming back now, which is great.
What about, to return to the agreement, could you talk a little bit about what the Columbia Basin Agreement was all about?
I'm talking about the Columbia River Treaty?
Yes.
Sure. Well, the Columbia River Treaty was signed by two countries back in the 1960s at a time when the tribes were not respected very much. In fact, the tribes were completely ignored in that treaty. It's between the United States and Canada. We've often referred to it as the Columbia River Water Treaty. It is focused entirely on hydropower and flood control and does not include the ecosystem or cultural resources or the needs of tribes.
So is the treaty essentially between Canada and the U.S. governing the amount of governing water, basically. How is it enforced, and how is it still today affect management of water resources?
Mm-hmm. Well, when the Columbia River Treaty went into force, there were several dams that were built, three in Canada, one in Montana, which dramatically altered the flow of the Columbia River. It depend upon snowmelt to bring the smolts, the salmon smolts, the baby salmon out to the sea quickly. But when they built all these dams, it slowed the river down dramatically, and so the fish don't get to ride that big wave of water coming through the Columbia River system to get them out of the river quickly. We often refer to this wave in modern terms as a flood, and a flood is a very good thing for a river system. It's very healthy, but oftentimes people think of floods as something that's really bad, and that's because people built into the floodplain, and when you build in the floodplain, you put yourself at risk, and when floods happen, which they will, then people view floods as a bad thing because you might lose property or homes or buildings or even lives. But if you don't want a flood, don't build in the floodplain. And when the Columbia River Treaty came along, it gave people permission to build into the floodplain.
So, and that was in the 60s. Tribes did not have a lot of power at the time, or they perhaps had it but didn't realize it and weren't working together towards goals that would benefit the fisheries and the traditions everywhere along the whole river system. What can you talk a little bit about how the tribal members along the route of the river depend on the river? They're fishing tribes, and have been for centuries, for millennia. How they came into entered the process, and where they are now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I work for four tribes, Yakima, Umatilla, Warm Springs, Nez Perce, and Umatilla, and we four tribes have treaties with the United States that were signed in 1855, and that treaty includes language that's very clear. It says the right to fish and hunt at all usual and accustomed places. So that is a contract with the United States. Starting in the 1960s and going into the 1970s, a couple of lawsuits went all the way to the Supreme Court. And it defined that the tribes do have a right to the fish, a fair share of the fish. Over time, the government changed their posture with the tribes from one of determination to now one of great respect and acknowledgement of their trust responsibility, their legal trust responsibility to the tribes. We also have many other kinds of laws that have come into place that protect the environment, things like the Endangered Species Act. All this is new since the treaty was signed with Canada in the 1960s. So we have a new layer imposed on the United States where you can't just go about doing business you did like in the 1960s. Well, this treaty with Canada, the Water Treaty, it changes in the year 2024 in a way that is not very good for the United States. It changes the way flood risk is managed, and it also gives an opportunity for the U.S. to address other issues. Some of the folks who deal with the power, people who generate power, the utility groups, we often refer to them as the power group. In essence, they are making a payment to Canada each year in the amount of $300 million, which they think is a lot of money, and they want to cut that back. And now we have the tribes that want to see a change in the treaty, too, to include the ecosystem and the needs for salmon. So there's this 10-year notice that can be given to, by either country to unilaterally withdraw from the treaty. That was that 10-year deadline was actually, our first opportunity was actually September of last year. And so the very many folks in the Pacific Northwest came together and developed what's called a regional recommendation, and they presented that to the United States Department of State to convince them to change the treaty. And the reason why so many people were involved in that recommendation was because the Department of State said that they're not going to go renegotiate a treaty with Canada unless everyone's in agreement.
Mm-hmm.
And so this regional recommendation was really unprecedented. It included the tribes, 15 tribes in the Columbia River Basin, all came together as a coalition. The four states, Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Montana, about 11 federal agencies, environmental groups, the power group, irrigators, cities, counties, League of Women Voters. I mean, it was an amazing experience to go through. It took about 3 years to do, but we did produce a regionally agreed-upon recommendation to the Department of State last year, and so now we're waiting for the U.S. to come back and tell us whether or not they're going to take up that treaty and renegotiate it with Canada. So I'm really excited about it. I will tell you, though, that it was very difficult for all 15 tribes to come together. Oftentimes, over the decades, we had not gotten along well with each other because some of the tribes in upriver locations have been experiencing great harm from these dams, and they don't have access to fish anymore, and so we often would fight over the water. But when this Columbia River Treaty came along, this water treaty, we said, hey, we got to stop fighting with each other. We got to band together, and we got to, this is probably the best opportunity in our lifetime to change this river to be managed to benefit everybody, including the fish, including tribes upriver and downriver. And so we did it. And a lot of this wouldn't have happened if the tribes hadn't first come together, because after the tribes came together, then the federal government said, okay, then, I think we can deal with this. We can work with this. Let's bring the states into the picture. So we brought the states in, and then after that, we brought in the power group and the environmental group, and then the irrigators came in. Then we started bringing in all these other groups. And so the tribes really got the ball rolling back in around the year 2010.
That's good to hear. I'm wondering about the Stephen Harper government. Have you negotiating? This is with the Harper government on these issues. It seems that that his administration would be more likely to side with the power group, as you referred to it. Is that going to be a problem at all? Do you foresee?
I'm sorry, who is this?
The Stephen Harper government in Canada.
Oh, Harper.
Yeah. Mm. He's not known as an ardent environmentalist. Or even...
I don't think he would side with the power group, because at least on the U.S. side, they want to give Canada a lot less money, so I would think that he would not want that either. They do want they haven't said this explicitly under the Columbia River Treaty review process, but the Canada does want something from us very badly. They want the fish back. And we want to give them back to them. So that's one thing they've said they want from us. They don't want that a part of the Columbia River Treaty review, because they don't want that to be a negotiating posture. But we do have something they want very much so, and that's to get fish past Grand Coulee Dam. And we want to help them with that. So they do want something from us. We want something from Canada, at least on the U.S. side. They want We want to have a better deal with flood risk management, and the U.S. also wants to not pay those big payments to Canada. So it's going to be an interesting negotiation if and when it ever starts. I really hope it does. But right now, it's each country is essentially posturing. Neither has decided to reopen the negotiation.
All of this, there's a lot more. I have many more questions. I'm afraid mm-hmm. we have just a minute left in which to briefly address the question of dam removal. How likely that is? I know the Nez Perce upriver. They have four. The fish in the river there have four additional dams to get past. Is dam removal part of any of the discussion?
On the Columbia River Treaty, I haven't heard about it. Haven't heard it come up. Dam removal on both sides of the border are things that are taken up depending on the purpose of the dam, the age of the dam, current needs and issues with the dam. So they're all a little bit different. There was a Condit Dam that was removed just a few years ago in the lower part of the Columbia. That was a wonderful thing to experience. So it really just depends on what's going on. So, fish passage at these facilities is important. Probably the bigger part of the topic is to get fish past the dams. And we think it can be done at Grand Coulee. And once we get fish into Canada, then several of those dams on the Canadian side, they were licensed in a way that would automatically require them to reconfigure their dams to allow passage at their dams. So that's great news.
That is good. On that note, too, I guess we are out of time, unfortunately. And I want to thank you very, very much for being with us today. I'm so, so glad that we had the opportunity to talk about this. I'd like to have further the conversations, a lot more to hear from you on both the Accords and, of course, this treaty. Thanks again. My guest has been Paul Lumley. He's the Executive Director of the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. Thanks again for that, Paul. This has been Air Cascadia for Thursday, March 2nd, 2015. Our engineer today is Ruck Bergeron.